I'm Jason Wright, and this is the Texas Titans Podcast. Just like the name of the podcast suggests, I will be visiting with Texas Titans of business, academia, sports, or whatever their chosen field, looking for the disciplines and habits that have made these Texans so remarkable. Success leaves clues, and I want to crack the code to these Titans' success and share it with you. Thank you for joining me here on the Texas Titans Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the Texas Titans Podcast. I think we've got a really good one for you guys today because this is going to not only be fun to understand who Holly Reed, today's Texas Titan, is, one of the most accomplished executives throughout the state of Texas, but also to learn about Texas's high-speed rail and Texas Central Partners. So I'm going to break this up kind of into two pieces. First of all, what is Texas Central Partners? Well, the Texas Central is the company undertaking the development, design, construction, finance, operation of the innovative new high-speed passenger train line that will connect the fourth and fifth largest economies in the country, North Texas and Greater Houston, in less than 90 minutes with one stop in the Brazos Valley. This project gives Texans what they have been demanding, the freedom of another choice when moving between the state's two largest regions by employing a market-led approach. Without the use of taxpayer grants, the project will serve as the model for future infrastructure projects of its kind. The Texas high-speed train is good for Texas, providing a safe, affordable, and productive and productive transportation choice that advances the state's economy and prepares us for the future growth. That is directly from the company themselves about who the Texas Central Partnership is. And essentially what it is, it's the Texas high-speed rail. It's our train. And leading those efforts as far as the face of Texas Central and the one that is out there in the trenches trying to make this work between the state legislature, between the actual landowners that will be impacted, the consumers who are anxious to see this thing happen, as well as all of the naysayers, those that are resisting the high-speed rail. The person most at the center of all of that is today's guest, Holly Reed. So we're going to talk to Holly about her career as an executive, first nearly 25 years, I think, with AT&T and leadership there, and then now running all of external affairs for Texas Central Partners. She's a great friend, a great executive, a statewide renowned leader. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy my visit with her. So a little bit about who Holly is. Holly Reed is the Managing Director of External Affairs for Texas Central Partners. Holly leads all of the outreach, government relations, and communications activities. Holly spent 25 years at AT&T and its predecessor companies, most recently as Regional Vice President of External Affairs. In this role, Holly was responsible for government affairs, working with local, state, and federal officials on diverse business and technology issues and outreach to civic groups on the company's commitments to local communities. Holly has also held leadership positions in customer service, finance operations, data center operations, marketing, and advertising. Folks, Holly is one of the most outstanding professionals that I have known over the last, I guess, probably almost decade now, and I think very highly of her, and I think you're going to really enjoy hearing what has made her successful, and then also learning a little bit about Texas's forthcoming high-speed rail project. So with that, thank you so much for joining the Texas Titans podcast, and I've got a little bit of a frog today, so that's why I've kind of got this Barry White thing going. So please forgive me for that. Hopefully my voice will be back to normal by next week. But anyway, thanks for joining us on the Texas Titans podcast. Enjoy my interview with this week's Texas Titan, Holly Reed. Thanks, guys. Hey, folks, this episode of the Texas Titans podcast is brought to you by Crown & Caliber. They are the smarter way to buy or sell a watch. They carry more than 40 brands, including Rolex, Omega, Cartier, Breitling, and Panerai. Plus, with a full-time staff of watchmakers and refinishers, they make sure every watch that comes through their shop is authentic and working as the manufacturer intended. Every watch comes with a one-year warranty and a hassle-free return policy. So, if it doesn't look or fit quite like you hoped, you can just send it back, and our listeners can get $150 off for their first purchase over $2,000 with the code Titan150. Folks, I have been to their facilities. I have met their watchmakers. They are top-notch. This is a great organization from the founder of the company all the way through. It's a great organization. If you are looking for a premium luxury watch to either buy or sell with a group that you can depend on to treat you right, Crown & Caliber. CrownandCaliber.com. Check them out. Hey folks, before we get started, I want to make one ask. Would you please go to jasonrightnow.com and download a free copy, free copy of my book, Push Play, Taking Your Life Off Pause. I would be so grateful. What this book does is it talks about my journey from corporate America into entrepreneurship, self-employment, life design, and life curation. I really think you'll enjoy it. It's a quick read, and I would be so grateful if you go check that out and also read all the other installments of the Make Your Own Rules blog at jasonrightnow.com. Here is the most recent installment that I wrote, which has to do with the whole idea of no matter how frustrating things are, if you have a dream, if you have a goal, if you have an ambition, you must keep pursuing it and you cannot stop. The only thing that can stop you is you. As long as you wake up in the morning, if you have a dream, if you have a goal, if you have a task that you want to achieve, do not stop. That's the idea. And here it is. Rule number 12, don't stop. Momentum is an amazing thing. Once you get it, great things can happen. However, the exercise of gaining momentum can be pure hell. It will seem like you're walking through wet cement. It will seem like momentum will never be achieved. You will feel unqualified. You will feel stupid. You will feel defeated. It will cause you to doubt your path, goals, and ambitions. You will ask yourself, if this is what I'm supposed to do, why is it so hard? The answer is simple. Nothing worthwhile is easy. I just watched a documentary called The Biggest Little Farm. I highly recommend it. It shows one couple struggle to leave the city and create a fully sustainable farm in the hills of California. Time after time, they could have stopped. Whether it was coyotes eating their chickens, uncontrollable wildfires bearing down on them, relentless snails eating their peaches, or gophers sapping their trees, they had plenty of reasons to stop. However, they finally gained momentum and pressed on. Now, Apricot Lane Farms is a tourist destination and the subject of a great film. I just saw a post from John Acuff, one of my virtual mentors. That basically means that he has no clue who I am, probably never will, but he's crushing it, so I watch what he does and take notes. He posted a picture on LinkedIn of him sitting alone in a meeting room. He had just planned his first meetup for readers of his blog. Only two people showed up. Neither were actual fans. They were well-wishers. In the post, John stated he had one of the people take the picture to remind him of where it all began when he set out to achieve his dream of speaking and writing. In the LinkedIn post, Acuff wrote, "I think about that moment sometimes because it felt like a failure, but really wasn't. It wasn't a failure. It was a beginning, and that's how beginnings often look. I'm practicing what I preach. I'm here right now. I'm pecking away at this blog knowing only a smattering of people may read it. I just recently spoke to a group of about 25 industrial workers, which is not exactly selling out a convention hall. However, it may as well have been. I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity. I will never take it for granted, and one day I will look back and remember the privilege of getting to speak to those folks. Whatever it is you are pursuing, a better marriage, being a better father, learning a new skill, starting a new career, getting in better shape, don't stop. Eventually, momentum will come, and when it does, do not let up. Remember each and every day the times when you were first faced with that metaphorical boulder and how you didn't think it would ever move. Get it rolling and continue nudging it, lest it stop, and you have to start the whole process over again. I'm reminded of what David Goggins, ultra endurance runner and former Navy SEAL and basically all around bad bleep said. You don't quit when you're tired. You quit when you're done. As long as the sun rises, as long as there is a breath left in you, do not stop. You rule. Thanks.
Holly Reed, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming by.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I cannot tell you how excited I am to visit with you because let me tell you something. If you are in the DFW area, the name and the face, Holly Reed, has popped up all over the place. And so, you know, and you're doing something different of the last, how long have you been with Texas Central?
Just about 3.5 years. It's hard to believe.
That's unbelievable. And then before that, spent 25 years with AT&T, the face of AT&T in this part of the country. And so I want to talk to you about your career as an executive. Kind of take me back to your days at A&M, right?
That's where you just absolutely.
That's what I thought.
Whoop.
Yeah, there you go. And so kind of get tease out and talk about what has made you successful. That's what the podcast is all about. And then I have a feeling we're going to talk a little bit about high-speed rail because that's kind of your world right now.
It really is.
So, all right. So as one of the top executives in this area, take us back to where you're from, how you ended up at A&M, and what that experience was like, kind of the early part of your career and just where you got started.
Sure. Well, first, thanks for being here because it's a great opportunity to talk to a friend and to for what you're doing.
Thank you.
I grew up actually in San Antonio, so just kind of down the street from Dallas, Texas, and went to high school there and then graduated, went to Texas A&M. Had an opportunity actually to play sports at the collegiate level, but decided I would focus on my studies.
What'd you play?
Everything.
You're tall.
I look
like a pro volleyball player.
Well, I played a little bit of volleyball, but mostly basketball, but I also swam and I play golf and tennis and all that. So I think that actually does set the stage for how I approach a lot of things in my life or the early lessons I learned playing sports.
Right.
And my whole family was really athletic, and so there might have been a little bit of competition going on as I was growing up.
Okay.
But went to Texas A&M, and about my sophomore year decided that all of those studies I was doing needed a little more practical application. And so did a cooperative education program with a company called Southwestern Bell, which doesn't exist anymore.
Yep.
However, it morphed into AT&T.
Right.
So I worked for a couple semesters at Southwestern Bell, and then upon graduation, came to work full-time for them in the Dallas area. Started actually in the call center.
Oh, really?
And in a leadership program where I got great experience doing a lot of different things. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, so I got a business degree so I could have a lot of different options.
Well, it's interesting you say that. So that's something you and I have in common. So my first job out of undergrad was with Computer Sciences Corporation. Now, most people don't even know what CSC was. It doesn't even exist anymore. But at the time, it was one of the largest IT and management consulting firms in the country. The reason no one had ever heard of them is because most of their advertising was done in Europe and most of their contracts were government contracts.
Hmm.
For instance, they did all of the IT work for NASA. They had an astronaut actually on staff at CSC, and they were one of the companies that helped develop the Hubble telescope.
Cool.
Now, I say all those awesome things to let you know that I worked for the credit reporting division of CSC, which had nothing to do with any of that. It was kind of like this little stepchild division of the company that just spit off a ton of cash. They had done this arrangement with Equifax to where every credit report in the middle of the country, CSC sold. So every Equifax credit report, it was an arrangement they had done, and then Equifax had a put on the company that they could exercise at any given time. I won't get into all the weeds on that. But I started out in kind of a management training program, and I started out in a call center where I would listen to people or take calls from people who had been denied credit because of a credit report that was pulled. And wow, what a fascinating time that was. What were you having to do? Because call centers, they're interesting places. What kind of calls were you taking for Southwestern Bell?
Well, it was a great training ground, and it prepared me for a lot of different things.
Yep.
I was in the residential billing department. So it was a great opportunity to solve problems, to work with people, and I worked with a team that many of those frontline service representatives have kids older than me.
Right.
So how do I work with folks that are much more experienced than I am and know how to deal with people? And I learned so much about working on a team and reaching goals together. And you can, if you solve somebody's problem, you can actually come out ahead of before they ever had the problem. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's you really have to be creative and understand people to be successful in that environment. And I loved it.
Well, and so, and one of the reasons why I even kind of stay on this topic a little bit is because, so a lot of the folks that I talk to these days, I do guest lecturing at universities, and I mentor a lot of business graduates who want to start their own companies or they're about to enter the workforce. And, you know, they may not want to start out in a call center, but learning interpersonal communication, problem solving skills, there really is no better way to do that. And you know what? Sometimes you have to learn to do that job that is, it's tough, you know, taking angry customers. And so that's why I wanted to just get that out of you, because I think those jobs are some of the most fertile training grounds for a new employee.
Absolutely. And you have to be open to the lesson.
Yeah.
And if you look for it, you'll find it. The environment was also a union environment. Wow. So my union contract was highlighted and tabbed by the end of the first week so that I understood what the rules were.
Right.
And how to get them right.
Right.
And, you know, knowing that going in is really challenging when you haven't come from any kind of environment like that. I mean, my jobs during high school and during college were swimming and lifeguarding and coaching swim teams and things like that. So it really was a new environment.
Now, was it a rotational type program? Was it?
It was.
You went from call center and you probably did some time in HR, then sales or that kind of deal?
Right. So this will shock all of my friends, but I actually was in IT once upon a time.
Wow.
And again, solving problems and working with technical experts and understanding how to remove roadblocks so that the subject matter experts can do what they need to do and facilitate that was a great experience. And then I also worked in finance in on the billing side. And so some of what I had learned about what was going out the door and how people would react to it came back as we were preparing all the bills to go out the door.
And so eventually you settle into, at some point, I know where you end up. Mm-hmm. You end up in public affairs, government affairs, you know, external affairs. But what was the first job that actually stuck, and how long did that last? And kind of what were some of the disciplines that kept you moving up? Because the thing is, too, you know, you're moving through, I mean, Ma Bell. I mean, you're moving through a behemoth of a corporation where standing out and climbing it's a challenge. So kind of walk me through that first job, some of the first wins that you had, how those were rewarded, and kind of what the path looked like.
Sure. So with a company as big as Southwestern Bell, then it became SBC, then AT&T, you have to be open to the challenges and the opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a big part of finding your path. I got to do a lot of different things. Today, people would change companies to have the different experiences that I had all within the same company. And I did time in strategic planning, and I did time in marketing and advertising, and all of those different experiences positioned me for when I did go into public affairs. I knew people that if I ran into a customer or an elected official that had a problem, I probably knew somebody in the call center that could help, or I knew somebody in billing that could help me with that, and that matters. You have to treat those relationships and grow along that path. So I ended up in the external affairs department at Southwestern Bell because, frankly, I was about to leave the company.
Really?
And I had a mentor who told me, don't leave. The job that you're in is not forever. Look for the lesson and then go talk to people in other departments and see where you best fit. And then you'll know what goal you're reaching for. And that's what I did.
Well, that's something that, again, that I try to impart to young people is, first of all, get a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something to be learned. Jillie Allison and I, I interviewed her a while back and said the same thing. You know, get a job. There's going to be skills and lessons to be taken from every job. And you mentioned a mentor. So how did you find your mentor? Did you go seek them out? Was it just someone that just took an interest in you? What did that look like? Because I think mentors, I know I've benefited incredibly from mentors. How did that come about?
Yes, and I'll go back to what I said a second ago. Sometimes you learn as much or more from jobs that aren't your perfect fit than where you want to be.
Absolutely.
And so, again, you have to be open and seeing that and realize that nothing is forever. But knowing yourself and knowing where you don't fit can be mm-hmm. very valuable. And I tell that to students and college students all the time.
Absolutely.
And so, yes, having a mentor or having a sponsor is incredibly important, especially in a company like AT&T, which at the time I was there was 280,000 people. I really felt like I would blossom in a place where it fit my natural skills. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't know where that was. And so that person giving me that guidance and that encouragement really kept me from leaving a company that turned out to be a great home for me for most of my professional career.
And so whenever you were about to leave, before you find the external affairs position, was it just because you were bored with the work? Had there been something that you had to kind of fight through, a disagreement, or was, you know, what did that look like? And then how long did it take you to jump into the different role and go, okay, thank goodness I stayed, I dodged a bullet, because now I've found my way?
I was in a position that I wasn't in love with, and I didn't see a clear path for me to get someplace that I would be a natural at. Mm-hmm. And so that guidance that I got showed me where that was. I didn't know there was a profession like external affairs or public affairs, and just knowing that was there really opened my eyes to a whole universe of different career paths. Mm-hmm. And what I ended up doing actually was, in my free time, after my day job, if you will, or during lunch, I worked at different volunteer organizations like the Dallas Regional Chamber and other organizations on behalf of the company. And because those jobs within Southwestern Bell came up so rarely because they were so coveted, I had to step up because I had done all of this work, and I guess I didn't screw it up. So when that job came open, I interviewed for it, they knew me, and I got the job.
Fantastic. So now you're doing the external affairs, and what does that look like? That's where you're going to the chambers? Are you having to do some of the government work? I mean, what did that role look like at that time?
Yeah, at that time, we were just, a telephone company. We were a landline telephone company, and by law, we couldn't sell this very lucrative product called long distance. Right. And, you know, caller ID was new on the scene, and you had two home phone lines, for one for you and one for your teenagers. Right. And we were on the cusp of welcoming in competition and getting into the long distance business, and you know, you look forward at where that company and that industry has gone, and it's a point of pride for me that I was a part of that.
Yeah.
So my job was working with local governments, working with local chambers of commerce, being the face of the company to the community, and working not only on public policy but philanthropy and the things that were important to our customers and to the communities.
And then when throughout the trajectory of your career do you become in a leadership role? When is that?
So of all things, this girl who was raised in South Texas ends up moving to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Wow. Right after we as SBC had purchased the Ameritech properties. Uh-huh. And I led our efforts there in the state of Wisconsin for 4 years. And that was almost like moving to a foreign country.
Yeah.
But the principles were the same. People are people. Yeah. And working to make sure that all of the philosophies and the culture was blended together. And I had been through mergers before, mm-hmm. but I had always been on the home side. Mm-hmm. Being from the purchasing company going into the area that is being integrated was, again, a really great learning experience because, you know, people don't understand what all the nuances of that cultural interexchange mm-hmm. mean. And it was a great blessing and an opportunity.
And how do you handle that whenever you know? Because, like, one of the toughest jobs I ever had was I did an executive leadership program with the Home Depot. Mm-hmm. And we had to go in, and I was hired by Bob Nardelli, the first outside CEO ever. And we're going in to tell store managers who, on average, are running a $55 million business, very entrepreneurial. These guys, a lot of them came up literally from pushing carts in the parking lot to being millionaires running a $55 million business that Bernie Marcus and Arthur Blank gave them a ton of autonomy to run. And then you had guys like me, you know, coming in trying to talk about Six Sigma and all mm-hmm. these different things. And fortunately, growing up in a small town, having to work with people much senior to me for most of my life prepared me for that. So for me, it was just show respect, understand that everybody has their strengths, and to kind of figure out their turf and what makes them tick before offering any suggestions. What was your strategy to go in to gain the credibility so that you could then get you get those people to kind of follow your lead as you went along? How did you do that?
Well, the first thing you have to do is listen and understand. And there is no way that I was ever going to have street cred. Mm-hmm. I'm from Texas and I'm here to help, right? So as I integrated myself into the community, I would joke about earning my Wisconsin residency card.
Yeah.
You know, I drank Miller beer and I had been to the Miller Park Stadium as well as County Stadium to watch baseball and Packers games. And then I would always close with, and I've been ice fishing. Have you? And you do those things to help you understand. That's an example. Those are all examples of how you prove that you're willing to put in the grit, you're willing to put in the time, and you will listen and understand.
Yeah.
And you seek advice. Right. And again, you know, everybody, it's been said time and time again, you will have a better team if you surround yourself by people that are smarter than you are and people that have strengths in areas that you don't.
Right.
And that's what you've got to do. And you can't be afraid to tackle the hard things straight on.
Yeah.
When I moved up there, we had a service network problem. And we had it all across the five states. And we had to deal with the Public Utility Commission and the legislatures, and we weren't serving customers the way that we needed to.
Right.
So we had to head that straight on and fix it and own it.
Right.
And we did. So it was a real big challenge to be able to do that. And it was one of the things I'm most proud of is navigating that as quickly and as astutely as we did.
Well, and another thing we have in common, the very first transfer opportunity I ever had was to go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin with CSC.
Oh, wow.
And I was 23 or 24 at the time, and, you know, I'm a fifth-generation Texan, and I've traveled a lot, but I'd never lived anywhere outside the state. So I was like, yeah, I know nothing about Wisconsin except the Laverne and Shirley, you know, Fonzie. And I was like, so I turned it down, and I really regret that because I think it would have been an incredible experience, you know, just to do something different. And so you mentioned something there that you guys had issues. So you're coming into a problem area where you're kind of the face of the company. You've got to blend personalities, personnel, and you've got service issues. So as a leader at that time, how did you start to develop your prioritization on how you're going to tackle these issues? And then as an executive, what have you carried forward? So for an example, and we're going to get to your current role,
sure,
which is, I mean, a daunting task that you've been faced with, but how did you start to develop that personal strategy of prioritization and execution whenever you were faced with an issue like that?
Well, again, you tackle it straight on and you have to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can communicate what you're doing, how you're doing it, and people understand that there are things in motion, then they're more understandable.
Right.
It can never be done quickly enough, but it has to be done right. And that communication element and being available can make a huge difference. I was not one of the technicians out there wiring up telephones, but I could point to them and show them that we were bringing more people in to help solve that problem as fast as we could.
Right.
You know, and saying, I'm sorry. Okay. If you miss it, apologize.
Yeah.
Because it's honest and it's true. And we weren't serving customers the way that we needed to, but we were working every moment of every day to get there.
Okay. So when do you get back to Texas? When does that happen?
So I moved back to Texas. I moved back to San Antonio, which is where AT&T is headquartered at the time. Now it's still SBC.
Mm-hmm.
Moved back to my hometown. Thought I was done. Bought an old house and renovated it.
Right.
Hugged my mom and dad. Said, I'm going to be two highways away from you so you don't darken my doorway every day. Love you guys. Worked on some campaigns that were in different states and then ended up actually in the war room as we were getting state approvals as we were purchasing AT&T.
Oh, wow.
And then from there, I moved back up to the North Texas area about 2 years in advance of moving the headquarters up to downtown Dallas.
Okay. And then at that time, is that whenever you become Director of External Affairs, or where are you there?
So then I was, oh gosh, what was my title? Regional Vice President of External Affairs.
Okay.
When I was first here, my responsibilities were radically different than once the headquarters moved here.
Right.
We just had a completely different presence and the same outlook, but integrating the company into the community was something that I was really proud to be able to be a part of.
Right.
And I look at the legacy that it's leaving every single day here, whether it's building a new downtown campus or the education programs or the technology or the suppliers and the ecosystem of entrepreneurs that are here. And I can see the fingerprints of that company on every single piece of that.
Right. And so you spend, so in total 25 years, and then about 3.5 years ago, I'm shocked. I think everybody that knows you is shocked that you're changing jobs. And so kind of take me through that, because that had to have been tough, because literally you grew up, right, in the business world. You grew up at, you know, Ma Bell and had a lot of success. And you're right. I mean, those are coveted positions because, again, it's hard work, but it's also you get to be that face of an incredible Fortune 500 company in the state of Texas like AT&T. So it seems like you must have been really passionate about what's happening now. So kind of walk me through that decision process and what it looked like, and then let's get into what's happening now in your career.
Sure. So I was familiar with the high-speed train project from watching them in the legislative session 3 sessions ago.
Right.
And couldn't imagine why there was consternation about it, because it's not government, it's not a government project, it's a very clean and efficient solution, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I never thought I would leave AT&T. I had a great job, great boss. It's a family. And it was a gut-wrenching decision. But, you know, I had done a lot of really important, valuable, rewarding work at AT&T. I really felt like the guidance that I could give on what we did and how we did it in the community was something I'm very proud of. But I'd done it for 25 years.
Yeah.
And as gut-wrenching a decision as it was, and I told him no 3 times,
really?
By the way, because okay. I loved what I did and the people that I worked with. But I wake up every morning, and I know that by building this project, we are saving lives. We are going to put a lot of people to work. We already have several hundred on working on it all day, every day, today. And we are going to transform how people think about transportation across the country. And that ability to do something transformational and leave a legacy was really the reason that I ultimately decided to say yes. And strangely, you wouldn't think that, you know, quote unquote, selling telephones and building a railroad are the same thing. But what the company needed at the time was experience that I brought with me. And that fit made me feel like it was kind of meant to be.
And so tell me what it's like whenever you're faced with huge decisions, you know, as an executive and now as just, I mean, a life decision. What does that look like for you? What is your process for kind of, you know, the Ben Franklin list? That's what some of the pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you have to make those really, really big life, literally life-changing decisions, how do you go through that process? What does it look like? Do you get advice? How do you do that?
Well, one of the first things that I did was I started talking to folks who were involved in the project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this real?
Right.
And luckily, I knew several of the principals involved in the project. And, you know, Jack Matthews and Rusty Kelly and a wide variety of folks. And they had really good answers to my questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I brought more questions.
Right.
And then I brought more questions. Mm-hmm. And by the end of all of my questions, I was solving problems in my head at night in my dreams. And I woke up and I thought, I can't imagine the train pulling out of the station without me. I want to be a part of that.
Wow.
And so a lot of logic, but a lot of prayer, and a lot of really searching about what did I want my legacy to be.
Right.
And I would never have left for just anything, but this really is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's what you and I have talked about, is that, you know, you're going to have your fingerprints on something that, you know, is going to be pretty significant, to say, to put it very mildly, in the state of Texas. So now let's talk a little bit about it. Tell me about high-speed rail, how it was conceived. I mean, because the listeners here, a lot of them are going to be literally, as crazy as that seems, probably hearing about the high-speed rail project and Texas Central for the first time ever through this podcast. Others have heard about it, but they're like, kind of what you said, is it real? I mean, in the circles I run in, obviously in the legislative world and that sort of thing, people, they come up to me, is that really going to happen? So take us from conception, kind of the history of it, where we are now, and just in anything that you think that the listener needs to know and understand about what's happening with high-speed rail in the state.
Sure. So it's a radically different approach to a public infrastructure project because it's not a government project. And that changes everything. Its genesis was from our founders who did a lot of work outside the country and would come home and say, why don't we have this? And so the question was posed, okay, if you were going to do this, and it had to survive as a commercial enterprise with a business plan and make a profit, where would you build it? And so a feasibility study showed and looked at 97 pairs of cities, because there are successful pairs of cities with high-speed rail all over the world. Mm-hmm. It's when you start getting into contrived systems that the financial model gets really complicated and oftentimes doesn't work to the degree that this will. So what two pairs of cities will make a business plan that will be financially successful? And Houston to North Texas came out on that list of 97 pairs of cities.
Oh.
And it's for logical reasons. If you look at the cost size of the side of the equation, it is straight, it's flat, there's no mountains, no major bodies of water. I think there's 500 feet of elevation change. And so the cost of building, and it's not as densely developed as East Coast or West Coast. So the cost to build that is in line with what the ridership and revenue expectations would be. You've got 7.5 million people roughly on each side, North Texas and Houston. The one stop in between, there's 80,000 college students between Texas A&M and Sam Houston and Blinn.
Wow.
Early adopters. These are kids that don't even want to get their driver's license.
Right.
And so you start studying that revenue ridership side of the equation, and you realize today there are 16 million trips already being made.
Wow.
So when you put a business plan together, it works. And so we have committed from day one, we're not going to take state appropriations, we're not going to take federal grant dollars. And so how do we put the fiscal discipline of the private market into building a project, an infrastructure project.
Right.
And we've brought the world's best partners on board to help us take advantage of their technology and their expertise. And then we hired a program manager to make sure that we stay on budget and on time. And so all of those pieces are now in place, and we're working with the Federal Railroad Administration to get the regulatory approvals we need so that we can hopefully get those permits, hit financial close, and start construction next year.
So if we start construction next year, how long will the project take to complete?
It'll be about a 5 to 6 year construction period.
Mm-hmm.
And that means the earliest you would be riding the train would be 2025 or 2026.
Okay.
We've got a great ramp-up plan. The technology that we are purchasing to deploy here is the safest in the world.
Okay.
I think you'll probably get to see it often on television because the newest train, which think about getting a new phone or a new TV, mm-hmm. you have all the benefits of the updated technology. This is the sixth generation of train.
Right.
The first high-speed train was rolled out in Tokyo. Just in advance of the 1964 Olympics.
Wow.
And this sixth generation of train is being rolled out in advance of the 2020 Olympics. So you'll get to see it on television, and you'll hear probably a lot of people that have ridden it. And that new train is being commissioned right now, and that's what will be coming to Texas, tailored for Texas.
How fast will it go?
You'll be able to get from Houston to just outside of downtown Dallas in 87 minutes, plus or minus.
That's amazing. Okay, and so right now we're kind of on the south side of downtown, and mm-hmm. this is where the station would be, right? And where will it go to in Houston? Where's the
Yep. So the station in Dallas will be just south of I-30. You'll be able to walk to the convention center. Okay. And the station location in Houston is the old Northwest Mall.
Right.
So just outside 610 between I-10 and 290.
Okay. So now let's go back to just some tips from Holly on how to be a successful executive. So I've got to believe that, and I've witnessed some of it, as many people that are listening to this have, whenever you present something huge and bold like this, even in the state of Texas, where we like things huge and we like things bold, I mean, we're the home of Buc-ee's, for crying out loud. So whenever you know that you have to communicate this to a very skeptical public and mm-hmm. everything, how do you, as kind of the one leading that communications charge, right? I mean, it's your job to, first of all, convince people this is a real thing, and then secondly, it's a real thing that they should get behind. What is your strategy? What did you tell the executives as, okay, here's the communications plan to go through this, and you know, just kind of walk us through what that looks like?
Sure. Well, the first thing that we have to understand is, why will it succeed? Mm-hmm. And it will succeed because people will write it.
Right.
And why will people write it? Because it's safe, because it's efficient, because it's reliable, and because you can be productive for the entire time you're on the train. Right. And your journey time, the average traveler will save over an hour.
Right.
So all of those things are reasons why it will be successful and people will care.
Right.
We have been talking with people all across the state, whether they're right there near the station or in other parts of the state, and they're excited for a lot of different reasons. Yes, they want to write it, mm-hmm. but there are also people that want to work on it. They want to say the same thing that I wanted to say. I had a part in building that. Mm-hmm. And we will, with the scale of this project, we will move companies that are small to medium, medium to large, and large to scale. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge opportunity for jobs during the construction phase, but ultimately, you want your train to be a new way to get from one place to the other. You don't want to travel, you just want to be there.
Right.
This will be the closest thing to that that there is.
Right.
And it's incredible to me that so many people are already making that journey, and most people are driving it.
Right.
90% of people drive it, and it's the second deadliest highway in the country.
Wow.
And with the growth rate of Texas, that's only going to get more dangerous and more crowded. So whether your passion is the environment, this will be a fully electric train, and it will be the cleanest way to get in between those two metropolitan areas. Whether that drives your passion or whether you're doing business, what you're really doing is you're actually creating a super economy.
Yeah.
You know, doubling the workforce, because oftentimes you can't get from the Woodlands to Northwest Houston or McKinney to downtown Dallas in an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And now you'll have a reliable, safe way that you know you'll get there in an hour and a half.
Wow. Wow. You know, you mentioned something earlier that is so true that has nothing to do with high-speed rail necessarily, the way I'm bringing it up. It did whenever you brought it up, but isn't it weird that kids don't want to get their driver's license like we did when we were kids?
It's so true. It's incredible.
It's weird. I have friends that their kids, especially the ones that live over here in the Metroplex, they just were like, yeah, I'm not interested. And I guess you think about it, why would they if they've got parents that'll haul them everywhere? And
mm-hmm.
you know, it's kind of nice. They can stay on their phones the whole time. But I find that odd about these upcoming generations is they don't get their driver's license a lot of times till they're 17. And even if they get it, they still don't use it.
Yeah, technology is driving a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, the first cell phones that came out were just phones.
Right.
But now, you know, you have your whole life on your phone.
Yeah.
And people are understanding that the focus on that technology can be dangerous.
Yeah.
So they don't want to drive, and
right.
they don't want to do that. And then what does that lead to? That leads to the sharing economy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what does that lead to? Because that sharing economy is becoming more pervasive and more different parts of our lives, mm-hmm. you also then have this move towards walkable communities.
Yeah.
And that's one of, I think, the exciting things about this project is not only that we're going to be connecting these communities, but each of the station locations is going to see that same wow factor of transit-oriented development.
Right.
You know, there will be office space, there will be retail, there will be multifamily, there will be a sense of a walkable space and community in each of the locations where the train will have a station. And that, I think, is really transformational as well.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's really interesting how Dallas has become much more urban. And when I mean urban, I mean it's like it is a livable, walkable city. Like downtown, the revitalization that's happening there. I was just in Houston a week ago. Same thing there. I'll be in New York this weekend where nobody has a car because you don't need a car. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, Texas has been so sprawling for so long that really we are moving into a phase where there is a demand, I believe, for this kind of more urban living downtown. I want the bodega right around the corner right from where I live. I don't want to have to go too far outside my little perimeter. And it seems like this just kind of satisfies a lot of what's happening in that regard.
It does. It does. And, you know, it used to be, I get asked a lot of times, well, people aren't going to give up their cars. Well, no, they're not. But this is another choice.
Right.
And freedom used to be I can take my truck or my car anywhere I want to, anytime I want to. Now it's I can choose.
Mm-hmm.
I can choose if I drive. And I can choose if I take the train.
Right.
And if I take the train, I know I'm going to get there faster and safer. And there are options for me on the other end to make sure that you get to your ultimate destination. Because
right,
we know that if we get you in between the train stations, but we don't get you where you ultimately need to go, you're not going to ride the train.
Right.
So our vision is get you from, I like to say, your desk to your desk or your couch to your couch.
Yep.
And make sure that that's a seamless opportunity and transaction. And that is what will drive that change.
Right, right. Okay, now, some of the things I like to find out about executives and leaders like you is what you're doing whenever you're not at work and what you know, kind of what the leader looks like. Now, I know you're an athlete, because we've talked about that before. So I am a fitness junkie. You know, my latest craze, and I know people on the podcast are going to get sick of it, but really it's just a cheap ploy to get my favorite sponsor one of these days. I love the Peloton. Have you?
I have seen that on your social media posts.
Yes, exactly. You're not going to be able to see much of my Instagram and not have a mention. Guess what? This weekend, I am riding in studio in New York with Matt Wilpers. I am so excited. So it will
fantastic
be my first ride in the Peloton studio. And actually, it's cool because Abby, my youngest daughter, she's almost as bad as I am on the Peloton. And so we're both going to ride a 90-minute Power Zone ride with Matt Wilpers. And I know that one of these days, Matt Wilpers is going to listen to the Texas Titan podcast. And he better understand I'm his biggest promoter. But anyway, so what are you doing to stay fit? Because I know you do. I know you're still an athlete. How do you train whenever you're keeping yourself in shape?
Well, we never have enough time to do those kinds of things, yeah, that we love like that. For me, I'm a runner.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily run to stay fit. That's one of the benefits of it. But it's the one time where I can really think clearly.
Yep.
I don't have a phone buzzing. I don't have anybody bothering me. I can solve problems in my head. I write my speeches. I work through a lot. I've had so many different God moments, mm-hmm, as I've been running, where I just have these eureka moments.
Mm-hmm.
And then I play golf, but I also have a special passion of traveling with my friends, and I do a lot of crazy trips and hiking and things of that nature when I can get away.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that I tell people is, to me, and this might sound, I don't want this to sound morbid or anything, but to me, training and exercise is the best antidepressant that there,
mm-hmm,
is. I mean, literally. And I'm the type of guy that in isolation with a lot of problems, I mean, I retreat within myself. It can be just bad and kind of dark. But if I will go and I will get on my Peloton, if I'll go for a run, if I will do something, you know, it is amazing what it does for your mind. So I'm like you. It's not just about physical fitness. It's about keeping my head clear as much as it is anything.
Absolutely.
And so, okay, so you're a runner. Now, you said travel, and I do know from your social media, you travel some cool places too. So tell me your favorite travel spots and what you like to do when you're there.
Oh, gosh, there's so many. My favorite travel spot is the next one.
Yeah, I like that.
So I just recently did a great trip with some of my girlfriends. We sailed and hiked in Corsica.
Oh, wow.
I've done some amazing hiking trips through Patagonia and the Inca Trail and things of that nature. you know, one of my dearest friends lives in New Zealand, so I try to get down there to see her. Wow. For me, it's about the places, but it's also about the people.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very blessed to have some great friends who love to do the same things that I do. And so the next adventure is always my favorite.
I like that. And I've also heard, because, again, I'm always looking for things that make you live longer, that keep you happy. I mean, I really want to understand these sorts of things. And one of the things that I've always heard is that having something in the future, having a trip planned,
absolutely,
is one of the healthiest things you can do, because it keeps you, your focus. It's something to look forward to, and it really does enhance just your day-to-day experience, knowing that thing is out there. Another thing you mentioned, the last interview that I just did, a well-traveled individual said New Zealand was undoubtedly the most beautiful country. He'd been to over 50 countries. Mm-hmm. New Zealand, most beautiful country he's ever been to. Tell me about New Zealand, what you did there, and just kind of give me a description of what it's like to be in New Zealand.
Oh, gosh. It's indescribable, really, and it's a very diverse country. Mm-hmm. It's obviously two islands, the North Island and the South Island. They're very different. One of the most beautiful places on the planet, I think, is Queenstown on the South Island. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of adventure things you can do there. Bungee jumping started there.
Right.
I've done several hikes down on the South Island.
Right.
But for me, my dear friend that lives there is on the North Island, and so some of the most special times have just been sitting on the beach.
Right.
There, I've spent a couple of Christmases there, which is great because it's summer.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's more about the fellowship and you know, getting outdoors. I really do enjoy being outdoors.
Right.
It is so green.
Yeah.
And lush. Yeah. And it's just, you know, again, helping you kind of think through and get your head clear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to get there. I've never been to New Zealand. I used to have this dream of going red stag hunting in New Zealand because there's red stag everywhere. But now I don't really hunt like I used to. So now I just want to go. I do want to hike. My first hiking experience was in the southern Hunan province of China in the foothills of the Himalayas. And it was awful. It was a mission trip. I dehydrated very early into the trip. Lost 15 pounds in 3 days.
Oh, gosh.
I didn't think I was coming home. But other than that, it was awesome. It was an incredible experience.
You live to tell about it.
I live to tell about it. So here's one of the things that I want to cover. And I talked to Mary Spaeth,
sure,
who is, you know, communications legend, has done some really neat things throughout her career. I look up to Mary. I consider her a mentor. And I brought up the fact that, you know, you guys have reached great success as female leaders. And there's a lot of focus on that right now, you
mm-hmm.
know, with whether it's the Me Too movement or just opportunities for all. And so, and I have two daughters, so I'm selfish whenever I'm talking to a leader who's female who has had a very successful career and has done some incredible things. So I'm selfish. I want to ask you, if you were talking to my daughters and you look back now on a career that spanned, you know, getting close to 30 years, and whether it's male or female, I don't want it to be just, you know, one or the other, but what is that one thing that you could say, okay, starting out, we've covered some of it, but here's what I would do from day one to year one to year 30. These are the things, if you will follow these things like I have, your chances of success may not be guaranteed, but they will be much more likely. What would you tell that young person?
I think it's different for everybody. I think knowing what you like, knowing what you don't like, mm-hmm. figuring out what you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can find a path where you get to walk on the intersection of your passion and your work, you will be successful,
mm-hmm.
and you will love it, and you will be dedicated to it.
Right.
And I've been very blessed to walk in that rare air.
Yeah.
When I was at AT&T, I really loved what I was doing. I knew why we were doing things, and we were making a difference, yeah. especially in the philanthropy side of that. That's what I feel like when I'm here. And it took me a while to figure it out.
Yeah.
But if you can find that rare air and walk that way, and then couple that with dream big. Mm. Because it was terrifying for me to make a big change.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of self-talk and a lot of prayer and said, you know what? If I don't dream big, I won't be able to do this big thing.
Yeah.
And so don't be afraid and do it anyway.
I love that. Oh, I love that. Be afraid and do it anyway.
Yep.
That's awesome. So
a girlfriend of mine said that to me once, and I've always remembered it.
I love that, because one of my favorites along those lines is, you know, I can't remember who said it, but what's on the other side of fear? Nothing. You know, and I love that. I'd be afraid and do it anyway. And then there was also, I just heard this quote that the best things happen after the butterflies. You know, you when you get butterflies in your stomach, mm-hmm. usually the things you remember happen after the butterflies in your stomach. And so I like, well done, Holly. Well, folks, there's the podcast. We got our line. As we do close in on this, one of the things that I like to ask every leader that I'm across the table from, and by the way, this is kind of funny. It's a weird survey that I've just started doing in the podcast. Have you read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People?
Of course.
Okay. So see, that is one of my litmus tests of letting me know that I'm on the right track, because nearly everyone that I interview, they've all read The 7 Habits. And so, and wow, what does that say for Stephen Covey? But if you'll remember, there's the chapter where he describes, you're walking down the street, you hear music, it's a church, you walk in, you're at a funeral, and you realize the funeral is yours. Not to be morbid, but you know, that's what Covey takes you through. And then that's one of those times where he says, seriously, and he writes, close the book and really give some thought to what you want people to say about you when it's all and done. So as you've had this great career as a leader, doing things you enjoy, traveling, when it's all said and done, what do you want said about Holly?
I guess that I worked to make things better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, better is a relative term.
Right.
It's not necessarily a bold term, mm-hmm. but I think everybody has their own definition of better.
Yeah.
And so my hope is that in the wide variety of things I've gotten to do,
right.
that I've touched a lot of lives and made them better.
Nice.
And this chapter that I'm in right now has a huge opportunity to lend itself to that.
Wow. I think that's fantastic. I think that's, and hey, I can tell you, you know, you've made my life better, because every time I've ever needed anything, I pick up the phone and you're always there. And I can't tell you how grateful I am. I mean, you being here today, supporting this little lark of a project that I'm trying to get going with the Texas Titans, you are a Texas Titan, Holly Reed, and I'm so grateful. Well,
thank you. Thank you for what you're doing, because this is going to provide inspiration, not necessarily this particular podcast, but these podcasts will give inspiration to so many. So thank you for doing what you're doing.
I hope so. Now, one last question with regard to high-speed rail. Anybody that's listening, where can they find out more information on the project, on what it is? Where do they go?
TexasCentral.com.
TexasCentral.com. Easy enough. Holly, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being a Texas Titan today.
Thanks for being here.
All right.
Hey, folks, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Texas Titans podcast. Before you go, I wanted to let you know where you can find us out there on the interwebs. You can go to show notes as well as listen to all the past episodes and look for upcoming shows at texttitans.blog. Also, that has all the different formats that you can listen to the show on if you go there. So texttitans.blog. You can also go to jasonrightnow.com. That has not only a link to the podcast, but it also has a link to my Make Your Own Rules blog that I think you'll enjoy. So please check that out. Also, it has information about my executive coaching business, speaking, and anything else like that. So jasonrightnow.com. That's literally just my name, jasonrightnow.com. On Twitter, I'm at JasonWrightTX. I would really appreciate a follow. I have not been a big Twitter user, so I need you guys to help me with that. So please take the time to go out to JasonWrightTX, find me, and follow me. I'm trying to get more active with it. And so if you'll engage with me, I'll try to do a better job of engaging with you. So I would appreciate that. And then on Instagram, I'd really appreciate a follow there. I'm at JasonWrightNow. Again, my name, now. So please follow me on Instagram. And then on Facebook, I'm also at JasonWrightTX. So check us out there. I'm also on LinkedIn, so look for me there. I try to use as many platforms as possible to let you know about upcoming shows, past shows, and then also just anything that I find interesting. I'm trying to push it out and get better with the social media. So please check us out there and follow us. I would be most grateful. And also, please do not forget,
it means the world to me for you to go to iTunes, give us a rating. Right now, we've got that 5-star rating. I'm hoping to hold that. Please, please, please. The comments that people are writing are so very kind. Thank you so much. It means the world to me. And that's how we keep moving up in the ranks. And right now, we're crushing it with downloads. The show has really had incredible feedback thanks to you guys. So I'm grateful. Please keep that momentum going by giving us a review on iTunes. Thanks so much and have a great day. And as always, I could not be more grateful for you listening. Thanks.